This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga, and here is what's coming up.
And as Africa CDC, one very core part of our work is to strengthen our health institutions, to strengthen our health workers' capacity, and also to ensure that health products are being manufactured on the continent and therefore more easily available.
That's Dr. Ahmed Ogwel Ouma, Acting Director of the Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention, speaking about the CDC's mission on World Health Day. Also, Rwanda remembers those lost in the 1994 genocide, and the United Arab Emirates Court rejects South Africa's extradition request in a corruption case. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Today, the world remembers the 1994 genocide in Rwanda. On April 7, 1994, a wave of killings of members of Rwanda's Tutsi ethnic community began. The spark was a plane crash that killed Rwanda's president, Juvenal Habyarimana, and Burundi's president, Cyprien Ntaryamira, both ethnic Hutus. The killing went on for 100 days and more than 800,000 Tutsis and moderate Hutus died. Rwanda's embassies around the world, including in Washington, today held annual Kwibuka, or Remember Commemoration events. In Washington, Fiaka Bienvenu, a scholar of post-conflict identity, spoke about the Rwandan government's efforts since the genocide to unite the country.
But as you congregate in the public square, laws were built and instituted that enable everybody to come together and actually reclaim that power of togetherness, of oneness, and looking toward, converging toward achieving one goal. So we see a lot of achievements.
Kansel Nishimie was a child when the killings began and wrote a book about her experience called Tested to the Limit. She quotes Holocaust survivor and anti-genocide activist El Wiso to explain why she tells her story.
It's my duty as a survivor to share, because all of us here, we learn from the history, we learn from those who have gone through that experience. So I love a quote from Elie Wiesel. He said, when you listen to a witness, you become a witness. When you listen to a witness, you become a witness. So for me, sharing is not easy, but I feel like it's so important to do.
There will be several days of commemorative events in Rwanda and elsewhere to honor the lives lost. April 7th marks World Health Day, a day to raise awareness around health issues that affect people all over the world. The World Health Organization says millions of people globally do not receive the medical treatment and prevention tools they need. Many of them are in low and middle-income countries, including in the African region. This year's World Health Day focuses on health for all. Dr. Ahmed Ogwel Ouma, Acting Director of the African Center for Disease Control and Prevention, tells VOA's Linua Mudu that delivering health for all is key for better health outcomes on the continent.
This World Health Day on the 7th of April, and the theme, Health for All, is at the core of our work as Africa CDC. We do everything so that everyone is protected from disease threats and health emergencies, meaning we are delivering health for all. We do everything so that the reservoirs of diseases and other and different pathogens in the animal and in the environment are contained before they affect the health of animals or human beings. This is us delivering health for all. Beyond human beings, we are also delivering health for the animal and the environment parts of society. Thirdly, the need for improving the capacity on the continent to deliver health for all is with us every day. We have shortages of health workers, We have shortages of health facilities. We have shortages of health products. And as Africa CDC, one very core part of our work is to strengthen our health institutions, to strengthen our health workers' capacity, and also to ensure that health products are being manufactured on the continent and therefore more easily available, meaning we are delivering health for all. Finally is our convening mandate. We bring together governments, non-governmental institutions. We bring together human health, animal health, and the environment so that we can all be able to work in synergy to deliver health for all.
So what are your thoughts on the average African patient who is faced with maybe some health challenges every day? What does a theme like this mean for that patient, health for all, if that person doesn't really have access?
That is really the majority of the Africans having challenges with access to quality healthcare. Our role as Africa CDC is threefold for somebody like that on the African continent. One is keeping them safer, meaning we want to keep disease away from the communities. And we do that by working with the communities, providing them with the right information, which they then consume within their own contexts and cultures. They avoid disease. The second aspect is ensuring that when diseases visit a community, we can be able to identify those diseases quickly and therefore reduce the risks of that disease spreading beyond the original person that had been affected. In this way, we protect the larger community from the effects of any health emergency or disease threat. The third is we work with our governments to expand the reach of the health system to the communities. This is a task that goes beyond Africa CDC's mandate, and our role is to ensure that governments have the capacity to understand, appreciate, plan for that expansion of the health system so that everybody has access to good quality healthcare. If someone goes to the health facility early, even if it is far, then they get treatment better, faster, and they get healing in a more from a lower level health facility. If they wait and the situation becomes serious, then it means they will need to go even further to seek specialized care. That's why community health workers are a very important tool in ensuring that communities are healthier and their health-seeking behavior is such that the lower-level health facilities are adequate to be able to resolve the health problems that they may have.
That's Dr. Ahmed Ogwel Ouma, Acting Director of the African CDC. He was speaking to my colleague, Linua Mudu, from Addis Ababa. As you just heard, many African nations struggle to provide healthcare to their people. One problem is that some developed economies recruit healthcare workers from the continent to fill gaps in their medical systems. Some governments are trying to fight this brain drain. Healthcare workers in Zimbabwe have condemned the government's plan to criminalize their recruitment to work in other countries as part of efforts to retain workers. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe's Association of Doctors for Human Rights says any attempt to prevent healthcare workers from leaving the country for better jobs would be illegal. The head of the association, Dr. Nomen Matara, told VOA Friday the government's plan to criminalize foreign recruitment of healthcare workers was shocking.
Also, in our own constitution, the Zimbabwean constitution, it actually guarantees that the citizens have the right to move freely within the country or leave. So we don't know why those comments were being made by the Honorable Minister of Health. The government continue to use scare tactics and a command approach to solving healthcare problems.
Matara was responding to comments Wednesday by Zimbabwe's Vice President Constantino Chiwenga. Chiwenga, who doubles as health minister, said the government would introduce a law against foreign recruiting of its healthcare workers to address a medical brain drain.
If One deliberately recruits and makes the country suffer because it lacks the required professionals. That's a crime against humanity. If people die in hospitals because there are no nurses and doctors, and somebody who has been so irresponsible of not training their own nationals, but wanting poor countries to train for them, it's a crime that must be taken seriously.
Matara stresses that Zimbabwe's healthcare workers are choosing to leave.
The government should note that health workers are not being pulled away from the country, but they are being pushed away by the meager salaries that they are getting. They are being pushed by the worsening economic crisis in the country. They are being pushed away by the poor working conditions in the country, lack of equipment, lack of sundries, lack of medicines in the hospitals that they work in. We urge the government to improve the working conditions, pay a living wage. You will see that people will not leave the country.
Justina Shawa is a nurse who's leaving Zimbabwe in May for better work in Canada.
If we were being given enough money, I don't think anybody would want to leave their families, leave their relatives and go work abroad. But at the end of the day, we all want to achieve good things in life. We all want to buy houses. We all want to buy cars. And we also want to send our kids to good schools. So we're failing to do all that. That's the reason why we are reaching out to recruiters. They've done nothing wrong. They're actually helping us to achieve certain things in life.
Zimbabwe's Health Services Board said in November more than 4,000 nurses left the country since 2021. The Zimbabwe Medical Association says the country has only 3,500 doctors for a population of almost 16 million people. Healthcare workers regularly go on strike over poor pay and working conditions. Zimbabwe's government says it does not have enough funds for raises and better equipment, and in January made it illegal for healthcare workers to strike for more than 3 days. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For more world news, check out voanews.com. A human rights organization in the Democratic Republic of Congo says extremist rebels killed more than 30 people early this week in the country's east. The local group, the Convention for the Respect of Human Rights, told the Associated Press that the Allied Democratic Forces, which has ties to Islamic State extremists, killed scores of men, women and children in Ituri province. Authorities say they are looking for more bodies in several villages that were attacked. The Weather Service says the ADF originated in North Kivu province but has spread neighboring Ituri, where the UN reports 144,000 people have been displaced between January and February. South Africa's Justice Minister has expressed shock after a court in the United Arab Emirates refused to extradite two brothers from the wealthy Gupta family. The Guptas are wanted in connection with corruption charges against former President Jacob Zuma, as Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg.
The Minister of Justice, Ronald Lamola, said he was dismayed to learn this week that a United Arab Emirates court held an extradition hearing for Atul and Rajesh Gupta in February. The court denied Pretoria's request, but South Africa was only informed now. The Indian-born siblings were close friends of former President Jacob Zuma and are suspected of using that connection to influence cabinet appointments and win lucrative government contracts, a scandal that's become known here as state capture. Zuma is facing charges in a separate corruption case. He and the Guptas deny all allegations. The Guptas fled South Africa in 2018. They were arrested in the UAE last year on South Africa's request. Lamola says South Africa will appeal the court's decision, which the UAE court denied on a technicality. The court said the charge of money laundering related to crimes committed in the UAE as well as South Africa, meaning the UAE has jurisdiction to prosecute it. The court also found the arrest warrant relating to the charge of fraud and corruption had been cancelled, which the Justice Ministry called inexplicable. This level of non-cooperation is highly unprecedented in the arena of extradition requests, the Justice Ministry statement said. South Africans would be justified to believe that they are being denied justice, the statement continued, adding the denial flies in the face of assurances given by the Emirati authorities that our requests meet their requirements. It's unclear if the Guptas are still in the UAE after recent media reports that they were spotted in Switzerland. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Lawyers for human rights in South Africa and the Scalabrini Center in Cape Town have launched an immigration detention hotline for those arrested before their immigration status. The two organizations say the service for refugees and asylum seekers is available 24 hours per day. Thuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The two organizations say their decision to establish a detention monitoring unit with a hotline follows a series of incidents where they had to approach police stations and the courts for the release of arrested refugees and asylum seekers. Eldona Muava from the group Lawyers for Human Rights told a civil society gathering in Johannesburg that those in need will be immediately assisted if they call the toll-free number or send a message to their WhatsApp account.
We assist our asylum seekers and refugees whose applications have been rejected and are still to go on review or appeal at the standing committee. We assist asylum seekers and refugees whose permits have expired but they've not been able to renew them on time. We assist newcomers who have declared their intention to apply for asylum but were arrested and detained anyway. And we assist failed asylum seekers, so people whose applications have been finally rejected, if they have a valid claim that we can take to the courts.
The establishment of this detention monitoring unit has been welcomed by different groupings. Drustin Dlovu is the chairperson of the Zimbabwe opposition party Citizens Coalition for Change. He told VOA that the hotline will come in handy for asylum seekers and refugees who are often told that there is no war in Zimbabwe.
We still have genuine political activists who are running away for their dear lives into South Africa. And those people should be allowed to apply for the asylums. Those people should be given an opportunity to exhaust the process. Because some of the people, they are just being victimized even when they come in this country.
Sechi Luamba Lwahimba from the Democratic Republic of Congo is one of the leaders of the African Diaspora Forum. He told VOA that the unit will be very helpful.
Vulnerable migrants are being arrested without receiving assistance, or they don't have means, financial means to call for an assistant. They end up suffering and stay in jail for so many days or being deported while they have different type of cases. The move is very positive. I welcome it personally. And let's see how it's going to move.
The United Nations Convention prohibits states from deporting refugees and asylum seekers. But these often happen without following due process. Human rights lawyers say they'll provide legal resistance for what they term unlawful arrests, detentions, and deportations. The Department of Home Affairs in South Africa is on record saying many people who have applied for asylum are just economic refugees who are abusing the system. It says many of these have further abused the appeal system, causing a huge backlog. The Refugee Act requires the asylum seekers to prove beyond reasonable doubt that their life was in real threat or danger when they fled their country. Last year, the Department of Home Affairs attempted to add a clause to the Act that would have made it easy for the police to arrest and immigration to deport any refugee who fails to renew their document after 30 days, but it was suspended by the courts after it was challenged by refugee rights groups. Reporting for VOA News, I am Thuso Khumalo in Johannesburg.
Ethiopia has begun dismantling regional forces established by some states to integrate them into the federal army, police, or civilian life. The French news agency AFP reports that the federal government has announced that special force members will be reorganized to build a strong centralized army that can maintain Ethiopia's sovereignty and security. The wire service notes that Ethiopia's constitution allows its 11 states, drawn up along linguistic and cultural lines, to operate their own police forces. But over the past 15 years, some states have established other forces acting outside constitutional constraints. In the now-concluded war in Tigray, ethnic Amhara forces and local militias occupied the western part of the region, an area claimed by both Amhara and Tigray. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken has said Amhara forces committed ethnic cleansing by forcibly transferring people out of western Tigray. UN investigators accused all parties to the Tigray conflict of committing possible war crimes. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Simpoga in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbe Yebro, and our engineer, Rob McNeil, McLean, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
African-led solutions are increasingly making the difference on the challenges of the 21st century, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken during his recent visit of Ethiopia. One of the most powerful testaments to the importance of African leadership has been the November 2nd cessation of hostilities agreement to end the conflict and suffering in northern Ethiopia. This is a major achievement and step forward, saving lives and changing lives.
The guns are silent. As the fighting has stopped, human rights violations have declined. Humanitarian assistance is flowing and finally reaching nearly all communities in need. Services are being restored in the Tigray region. The TPLF is disarming. Eritrean and other non-federal forces are departing. The dedicated diplomacy of mediators from the African Union, from Kenya, from South Africa, supported by the United States, was essential to securing this agreement. And the AU monitoring mechanism is a key to its full implementation.
We welcome the commitments that the parties have made to acknowledging the atrocities committed and their devastating consequences, said Secretary Blinken.
Recognizing the atrocities committed by all parties is an essential step to achieving a sustainable peace. We urge Ethiopians to follow through on their commitments to each other to implement an inclusive and comprehensive transitional justice process that includes both reconciliation and accountability. Overcoming poisonous grievances and ethnic divisions is the only way to break the cycle of political and ethnic violence in the north, in Oromia, or anywhere else. As a partner in that effort, the United States is providing both technical and financial support.
Nonetheless, because building lasting peace is being made more complicated by the acute economic challenges that Ethiopia faces, the United States will keep partnering with Ethiopia on food security and more, said Secretary Blinken.
We'll keep working together on public health, building on our many years of partnership to combat HIV/AIDS and continue to tackle the COVID-19 pandemic and make sure that we're all prepared for future pandemics. We'll continue to support Ethiopia's economic development, investing hundreds of millions in health, economic growth, education, democracy, and food security every year. And we'll continue supporting migrants and refugees and victims of human rights abuse.
In all that we're doing, said Secretary Blinken, our mission is to build a strong partnership between the United States and Ethiopia that ensures we can meet the aspirations of our people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.